This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm going to start with congratulations.
Thank you.
What was it like? I would imagine that Les Mis is, they've been talking about, you know, doing this for a while, and I would imagine with all the different parties trying to make it sort of go. Okay, I've butchered my, let me start again. Hi.
Hello.
Coming off the success of King's Speech, you win Best Picture, you win Best Director, you have the juice. You can do basically whatever you want. I would imagine everyone's offering you stuff. The stack of scripts is crazy. Les Mis. Is it your first choice? Is it the thing that you went after? Or was it something that just you had heard it was available?
Well, this secret story that was going on while the whole King's Speech thing was happening was I was seriously considering Les Miserables and going on a journey of discovery about Les Miserables, trying to work out if it was the thing I wanted to do next, and that involved me seeing the show a number of times. I disappeared off from New York to Chicago to see the new production, and I was reading the book. I was carrying the book around with me during all the King's Speech craziness, and it was sort of my anchor in that slightly mad time. I think I felt like I was fortunate enough for the industry to give King's Speech that kind of recognition, I should use it to take a risk or to be bold or to stretch myself and not retrench into some kind of conservative next choice. And I think a movie musical, one could safely say, is about the riskiest next choice you can do. Hugh Jackman calls it the Mount Everest of filmmaking, and I kind of know what he means, in the sense that even when I see the film now, I can still see all the kind of pitfalls that I could have fallen into. It's I think it's a very demanding form of filmmaking, because you're taking on a mode of communication that's not our mode of communication. I mean, you're creating a world in which people communicate through song. So you're not taking advantage of the naturalism of spoken dialogue, and so you're making this step into unknown territory or into a different style, and success is so dependent on whether you can make the idea of a world where people communicate through song natural and vital and visceral, so that you just enter into the story, accept it, and go on the journey as you would in a normal movie.
You obviously, something that you did which was unexpected was people singing live.
Yeah.
Was there ever a time that you thought, we're not going to do it, we're going to do it the more conventional way, or was your immediate thinking, we're going to have people sing live?
No, I was so kind of, I was so passionate about doing it live, I made it clear that I wouldn't do the film unless I did it live. That was my level of belief, that live singing was the way to go for this particular story. I mean, it came out of a lot of thinking about the musical form. I mean, partly it was personal, that even in the great, great musicals, I have to get over the lip-syncing issue. Like, I have to forgive the lip-syncing issue. That, you know, I feel a slight feeling of embarrassment when people lip-sync, unless it's done absolutely perfectly. And I didn't want any of that falsity in this film. I wanted it to be, I wanted it to be very real. I also kept thinking, well, you know, if this is a world like ours, but where people communicate through song, then why wouldn't you record the singing like you would record dialogue? Why would it be any different? But most importantly, it was about acting. Like, you know, great acting is all about being in the moment, being in the present tense, and if you know, the combination of live singing and live piano, because that's the other really important thing, that the accompaniment was live, gives the control back to the actor, and they have all the control that they would have like in a dialogue film. So if they need to wait a fraction of a second for an idea or an emotion to form in their eyes before they express it, they can. If they get emotional and they need to stop for a beat, they can. If they cry and they need to take that through to the end of a song, they can. If you're lip syncing to playback, you know, a lot of your brain is focused on matching to the millisecond this decision path you laid down 3 months before, which is quite antithetical to the process of acting. So I wanted to hand the power back to my cast. Obviously, that required me getting a cast who were actually able to live sing, because it's, you know, you really have to actually be able to sing properly to do it that way. But I wanted the film to feel real and visceral. And I remember on the very first day of shooting, I was up a mountain with Hugh Jackman, and we were filming that moment where he sings "Freedom at Last, How Strange the Taste." And I had the camera on my shoulder because we were quite a skeleton crew up the mountain. And you know, I remember just hearing the cold in his voice because it was below freezing, and you could see the condensation, and you could hear in the quality of the voice the cold. And that to me was thrilling, because I thought this makes it visceral. It doesn't feel fake. You're not hearing some studio vocal overlaid on a mountaintop. And you know, that moment on the top of the mountain, where I had the music channeled in my earpiece, so I was kind of moving with the music and him, that crystallized a lot about me feeling like this was the solid way to do it.
I think you might have permanently changed the musical genre based on the way you did this one. Well, because I loved the way it was live, and I agree with everything you just said. And I think that there is a falseness when they're, you know, you're exactly right. The mm-hmm. actor, when they can do it in the moment, you know, it's believable. I definitely want to ask you, spoke to Eric, and he said the first cut was like 4 hours.
Yeah, the assembly was, just under 4 hours. Yeah.
Right. Obviously, that has to be like, holy F, when you first sit down and you're saying to yourself, I got a 4 hour first cut. Because a 4 hour first cut, that's a pretty long movie. So what was it like the first time obviously you get rid of your assembly, you put together like your director's cut. What's the length of that one?
Cut was about 3 hours. So I got an hour between the assembly and the director's cut. I got about an hour out. And I got it to kind of 2:45 and then hit a bit of a wall, because you know, there comes a point where you've made a decision about which songs you're going to keep, and at some level what's fundamentally different about doing this for a normal movie is you can't take time out anywhere you want. Like in a normal, you know, if you're editing, say, this dialogue we're having, you can snip a second out of every time I pause, you could take a second out. Every time you pause, take a second out. You can take a sentence of mine out and leave another sentence. You've got tremendous control on the pacing of our dialogue that we're having. If we were singing, you can't just stick your knife in. You can't take a second out here, a second out there, a sentence out there, because the musical construction falls all over the place. And I realized in the end that the only way I could get it down anymore, and I was very committed to getting it to under 2.5, was to become, you know, try to become more expert at the detail of musical construction, so I could really understand in terms of bars what was possible and what was not possible. I really kind of thought about it and asked advice from my team, and there was a day where I suddenly, you know, one day on a Sunday I took 12 minutes out in one sitting, because I'd finally worked out all those musical places where you could cut material out. And a lot of it was hangovers from the show, because on a stage show you have to have introductory music to take you in somewhere and exit music to change the set over, and I suddenly kind of started to realise there was lots of music like that that wasn't essential to the film that we were hanging on to because of the tradition of where it had come from. But I think one of the hugest challenges of this, and you know, any director or editor will know exactly what I mean, is when you do a musical, you surrender a huge amount of the control of pacing, because you can't pace the songs up. I mean, Dream to Dream, you know, you pick your take, but you can't pace it up. And so if that section of the film is sagging for any reason, you can't, you know, you can't dig into that place to do it. And I really, so when I was shooting, I was always trying to work out ways of giving myself different gears or different control of pacing through the way I shot stuff, if I knew I couldn't do it in time terms. But it's a real challenge of the form, pacing something where a lot of it you're not allowed to touch because of the way music works.
I asked Eric, and I'll ask you, say this film super successful, is there stuff in, basically, would you be willing to do an extended cut? Because I know what that means, and Eric pointed it out, you'd have to really go in and, you know, do huge new score thing. It would be a lot of work. Could you ever see yourself doing a longer version of this, whether Blu-ray or theatrical, or is it sort of like, I did it, this is the one?
It's a very... I used to think definitely I would do it a longer version, having been through the oil tanker that this thing is, to wrestle it into, you know, where we got it. I'm aware that the moment you kind of go, let's go back in, it's not a simple process. But you know, let's see how it goes, and if we feel there's tremendous demand, I'd always consider it, but it's difficult because it's, you know, at the same time I feel like I've paced it as I wanted it to be paced, and do I want to put out into the world a less well paced version? I'm not sure, but you know, if there's interest in the community of the fans of the musical, then I'd certainly consider it.
Are there anything that you would consider deleted scenes that fans can expect on the Blu-ray?
No, as I want to give myself the option of the extended version.
That's a very honest answer. Yes. I appreciate that.
Having also said that I might not do an extended version, but
it's good. Yeah. 10 years that way. If there is no extended version in 10 years, you can put out the deleted scenes and have everyone be super happy.
Yeah.
I am curious though, if you did an extended version down the road, how much longer do you think it can be, based on the footage you have?
I'd probably put 15, 20 minutes back. You know, I wouldn't go back to the four hour spectacular.
Well, a lot of people don't realize the 4 hour version is a lot. Is the take beginning to end? It's like,
yeah, and everyone comes through every door and yeah. crosses and sits down and does the whole action and the battle sequence. I think was probably about a quarter of an hour long in the full version.
What was it like for you? There was so much interest in this. People were videotaping when you were filming in London. Yeah. You know, anytime you're on location, there were photos getting out. Were you sort of like excited by the interest, or were you sort of like, oh, please God, no more footage get on the internet?
It's strange because when I made the King's Speech, it was a very private process because no one knew what the King's Speech was at all. I mean, it was based on a play that had never been produced. It was about a subject that people didn't really know about because the story of Lionel Logue was kind of hidden from history. This could not be a more different process in terms of how public, you know, it was, or people wanted it to be, even if we didn't want it to be public. I suppose the nice thing about it was the feeling that I was making a film that people really wanted. Like, you know, it must be demoralized when you're putting all that work in, kind of going, does the world even want this movie? But there was a real feeling, because of the extraordinary, you know, 60 million fan base, that this was something that people were going to be curious to see and had an appetite to see, and there are times when you're working those kind of insane hours that the feeling that whatever happens, there's going to be an interest in what you're doing, you know, does give you more, I don't know, more energy and courage to carry on.
I'm curious, what's the book that you're reading right now that you're carrying around with you? Because maybe I can learn what you're thinking about for the future right
God,
now.
I'm not actually reading or carrying around any book at all. But it's true. It's a shame because maybe that would be the clue to what I'm about to do. So maybe I need to. I'm going to get very self-conscious about what book I pick up and start reading now.
I'm a huge fan of your work. I'm a big fan of your work.
Thank you.
And I'm curious. You are in this amazing position as a filmmaker after delivering King's Speech and after what you've done in the past and after the success of what this is going to be, especially delivering this oil tanker that could have easily spilled.
Yeah.
You know, you brought it to shore. What are you thinking about and what scripts? I know it's so early and I know you're going to take a break, but what are you already thinking about in terms of, my God, I'm going to be able to make whatever the fuck I want to make next, and they're going to let me because of what I've done?
Yeah, I don't quite see it as that, but maybe I probably is that. Probably
no, it is. It is that position.
Yeah.
let me just point the light out for you. You're in that luxurious place.
Right. I don't know. With it, I still think it carries a huge responsibility, but you're still spending a large amount of someone else's money, and they still won't thank you if you don't get it right. So I don't. I think that all those responsibilities I still feel very keenly. I mean, I suppose I do feel inspired to kind of do something different again. Maybe that, you know, that because it's been hugely exciting for the last year and a half to not be living on a daily basis in relationship to the formulaic. Like, because sometimes when you're directing, you know, I don't know, you're directing a scene in a car. Like, how many ways in the end are there of shooting a car scene? There are not that many ways because there are only certain places you can put a camera to shoot in a car. And whenever you do it, you're reminded of the 14 other times you've shot in a car, and you kind of go, am I being that different? Maybe. Whereas with this, I honestly never felt that I was rubbing up against the formula because it wasn't really very formulaic what we're doing, and I found that incredibly exciting. So I suppose there's a hunger in me to think about something where, again, I'm freed from a formula. I'm venturing out in a place without a formula.
I'm definitely going to throw this out there. I know that they're getting ready to gear up for the next Bond movie. Is that something you'd even consider? And also, I want to know your thoughts on the comic book genre, because it seems to be the biggest thing ever right now in terms of, you know, Dark Knight, Avengers. Are comic book things something you're interested in? Or is it something, a genre you're like, no way?
I suppose I've always felt like I've had a kind of epic filmmaker hidden within me, screaming, trying to get out. And John Adams, I suppose, was my first opportunity to sort of paint a world on a much bigger canvas, which I felt very grateful for. But there, you know, in the end, there is something in the comic book genre that you get to build a world from the ground up and follow a vision through physically, which I think is exciting. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. We'll have to see.
Okay, well, you didn't answer my Bond question, though. Is Bond something you'd even be willing to talk about, like something to consider?
I'd certainly be willing to talk about it. I mean,
what I'm saying is the
10-year-old in me would think there's probably no higher honor than talking about that.
Well, what I'm saying is, have you had a chance to see Skyfall yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't actually had a chance to see any films at all. I'm maybe going to tonight go and see my first movie. But is it good?
It's fantastic.
Well, I've heard it's good.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's a great combination of direct. I mean, you know, Sam Mendes and Craig. It sounds like a really cool combination.
And also Roger Deakins. I was going to say,
you know, what a hero is Roger Deakins. He's got an astonishingly good eye. So that's really, and, you know, I think Barbara Broccoli and Michael are making some really interesting choices about who they use at the moment. So, you know, I think they've reinvigorated that franchise in a brilliant way.
So you would take their phone call?
I'd always take them. They're very lovely people.
My last question for you, because I got to wrap. Film seems to be a dying art form, because everyone, even Deakins, is moving into the Arri Alexa. Peter Jackson just shot in the Red Epic. What's your feeling? Because I asked you this on King's Speech, and I'm curious if anything's changed with you.
Well, I shot on film on this, 35mm. And I'm very pleased I did. I'm pretty tough on the cameras. I mean, we were up mountains, we were in water, we were in battles with, you know, using live gunpowder. Like the cameras get thrown around a lot and get knocked a lot, and, you know, there's a lot of handheld. And film cameras are just really fast and really robust. And you know, we're doing an IMAX version of the film, and it's still, you know, 35mm is a fantastic place to, you know, to go for an IMAX. So, you know, but you know, ultimately there's a part of it that's not that logical, and it's about emotion. It's about the fact I started making films when I was 13 on a clockwork 16mm camera, and even the smell of film, you know, just brings back my childhood memories of loading film up, or sometimes crying because I couldn't load the film up, and even when I get to operate, just hearing that noise in my ear to me is filmmaking. But you know, I know I've probably got to let it go.
I'm familiar with the Bolex myself.
Films, it's fantastic, isn't it?
It's a magical thing.
Yeah,
I'm going to say congratulations on this.